There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to our new PR Week podcast episode with John Harrington.
Hello, I'm John Harrington, the editor of PR Week UK, and welcome to the PR show. The coronavirus pandemic has been a challenging time for established PR agencies, with some battling to survive and most having to downsize to get through the worst of it. Despite this, there has been a surprising number of new agencies that have launched during the crisis, promising to carve out a niche in a market that is already under strain. Today, we'll take a closer look at four new agencies to find out why they have decided to launch at this difficult time, the challenges they have had to overcome, and the opportunities that lie ahead. Joining our panel is Shook co-founder Gemma Moroni, Hard Numbers co-founder and MD Daryl Sperry, Colder founder and director Kamiqua Pierce, and Bold White Space co-founder and MD Mike Robb. Thank you for joining us. We're going to start with a bit of agency speed dating. So in 1 minute, please tell our listeners about your agency, why it is different, and what makes it a compelling prospect to potential clients. Let's start with Gemma, if that's okay.
Thanks, John. So my agency is Shook, co-founded by me and Damon Statt. Our superpower is we combine behaviour design and creativity. And for us, that's about understanding how to create action, not just words. And we combine the two things to fix brand, business and behaviour challenges and deliver ideas with impact. So there are agencies that say that they understand behaviour. There are agencies that say they are very creative. What we do is bring the two together using a new way to model behavior design, and combining that with creativity to create action from audiences, not just words. So far, we've worked with about 5 different brands, everything from a purpose project for a very large tech company through to working across comms and creative for the Ruth Strauss Foundation charity, and also some campaigning work during the pandemic when we helped a charity to campaign for the government to house people experiencing homelessness with their pets. So what we offer is the superpower of behaviour design and creativity for brands who want action, not just words.
Thanks, Gemma. Daryl?
Thanks, John. We are Hard Numbers. We are a performance-driven marketing and communications consultancy with a focus on delivering demonstrable return on investment for our clients. We create campaigns that drive pipeline, sales and company growth for tech, data and professional services businesses. We are different by design. Our name says it all. We deliver hard numbers. We are as comfortable in front of a pivot table or CRM as we are speaking to a journalist, even one, John, as probing and as sharp as you are. We don't sell time. we sell results, no timesheets, and all of our relationships are based on deliverables, which drive an outcome for our clients. We speak and report our impact in plain English, no PR yoga babble. And we create leads and pipeline by any means necessary. So that could be PR, that could be content, digital events, or that could be going route one and bashing the phones to create leads for our clients if we need to. And we use the latest technology. So we use HubSpot, Google Data Studio, and Propel to be better and more efficient at what we do and prove it to our clients with real-time, transparent reporting. In short, John, we deliver hard numbers.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Thanks for the compliment too. Kamiqua.
Hi, John. So Colder, we're a new consultancy and we're for brands and organisations that want to do better business on purpose. So we exist to help companies, brands, organisations break the ice that can sometimes exist between business strategy, culture and their reason for existing. We have a community of culture consultants. We've earned our stripes providing consultancy and creative narratives for mainstream clients and big business, but also the novel and the niche. And so we understand the intersectional ways that underrepresented audiences live, love and work. So we're here to really support those companies who want to not only walk their talk, but want to respond to societal needs and need a little bit of support and help on their journey to more purpose-led growth. From a team point of view, we're diverse from the outset. Culture is baked in from the outset, and each team member will always be encouraged to bring their full selves to work because we think that's our competitive advantage.
Thanks, Cam. And finally, Mike.
Thanks, John. So Bold White Space is different because we are overtly bringing together advertising, marketing, and PR in one agency, with great people in each of those areas from the very beginning of the firm and underpinned by great technology that informs our delivery. And our methodology is entirely driven by that. So based on what we call a whole world brand view, where we consider what really matters across all of those areas and irrespective of channel. So in practice, this means being able to say to a client, look, don't do any PR at all when it makes sense, which frankly, I don't think is always possible within a traditional PR agency model. And our technology, which we've been building since the start of February, reviews and tracks a client's entire brand across all those channels in one place and identifies what we think are the real challenges, ultimately informing what we do in delivering better work. So far, it's been a great start. We've got 6 clients, everything from day-to-day PR through to brand design, brand strategy. And we've got our first out-of-home campaign launching in a few weeks' time.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for that, Mike, and thanks everyone. Plug time over. Let's get into some of the questions. The first question is a quite a basic one, really. Why did you decide to launch an agency during the coronavirus crisis? Who would like to start on that question?
I'm happy to start if you like. I'm going to assume that everybody here has a similar answer, which is we didn't. So, I have worked together with Damon for the last 15 years and we've always talked about setting up an agency together, and we resigned in November last year because we got offered a brilliant opportunity to finally do it. We left our old jobs in mid-March and by the following week the whole country had gone into lockdown, so it was certainly an unexpected challenge and one that we hadn't planned for when we were thinking about setting up our new business. But actually we've been really fortunate in that the following week after lockdown we secured our first project, and it was for a long-term retained project, so we were able to start off with that while still setting the business up. So we've had that and further projects that have come into us on recommendation for March, April, May. And then we officially actually launched in June, just a couple of weeks ago. But we've been fortunate that we've been able to be doing things behind the scenes in the meantime.
Great. No, that's that sounds positive. Who else would like to discuss the origins, I guess, and why now and why during the pandemic?
I'm happy to, John. Much like Gemma, you know, the truth is this was a long time in the planning. I've been talking to my business partner, Paul Stollery, about this in sort of November, December time. And I can very honestly tell you, we didn't plan on there being a global pandemic when we were discussing hard numbers all the way back then. I took the decision to leave a very comfortable and very well remunerated job at a great agency like Hotwire in February, and then we announced that in March, and we didn't launch the agency until
until June at a very similar time, luckily not at the same time as Gemma's. We didn't time that, but I'm so glad we didn't launch on the same day. I've got to be honest with you, John, I'd be lying if I said there haven't been moments of doubt through that period of time. But, you know, as I sit here now, we've got six clients. We've got a very, very fast growing business. And I couldn't be happier that, I took the plunge and I gave it a go. But come back and ask me how I feel in 6 months' time.
Will do. Would either of the other two of you like to discuss your sort of agency origins and the timings aspects, and maybe reflect on some of the challenges that's brought?
So I'm happy to go. So similar to everybody else, actually, I think my first proper realization that we were launching in a pandemic was when people kept saying, ex-colleagues, you're so brave. Because actually, I was at Weber Shandwick for a while, and then I was at the NCS Trust for just over 3 years. And I left that role in March. And actually, I think both pandemics, so COVID and probably the sort of Black Lives Matter movement and the whole move towards anti-Black racism, just really provided that real clarity and just that understanding that there was a more unique offer that I could sort of spearhead and provide to the industry. So it was kind of a combination of both of those things, really kind of crystallizing that there was a need for some different thinking and a more unique way of working. But I guess to the other point, that it's not been without its challenge in terms of setting up and, you know, physical shops versus remote working, the fact that we're all a little bit exhausted by Zoom and missing a little bit of the traditional ways where you can build relationships with clients. Although in some ways that has presented a bit of an opportunity too, because I think the fact that we're kind of employees one minute and mums and dads and doing other things the next means that you it's an opportunity to have more kind of real and honest conversations and build better relationships. But I think it has been quite tricky in some respects to launch at this time.
Good stuff. Mike, did you want to jump in now and talk about your experience?
Sure, I'm afraid it's the same story. I mean, yeah, we didn't plan to launch during a crisis, same as Gemma. I resigned back in November and then left MHP in February. But I think, to be honest, we probably have in common the fact that we clearly saw an opportunity in an industry pre-pandemic. And so I think, I think that the model that we thought about back in November is just more applicable today, where you've got clients wanting, frankly, better value, more agile at an approach, clearer delivery. And if anything, the pandemic just accentuates that and makes it more relevant. So it's definitely been, you know, challenging. And you had that moment of, you know, how's this going to impact the short term? But I mean, for me, it's actually been quite an enjoyable process over the last few months, different for sure. But, you know, the main challenge for me has been hiring people. And you know, we raised a bit of money to launch this. And part of that was to make sure we had quality people across all the different areas of the business and in the different channels with different expertise. So, you know, we've hired eight and I've not met six of them yet. So, you know, it's a definitely different challenge doing that and going through that process. But we met at the end of last week for the first time and it definitely changes things. But actually, I think the hardest bit is not so much the hiring, but the embedding of a culture and team relationships and so on is definitely harder when you've never been together physically. But, you know, hopefully that will change in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I'm sure. Would anyone else like to discuss the kind of people and talent challenges in launching at this this bizarre time?
I think actually one point to make is because, unfortunately, of the fallout of the pandemic for so many people, actually there's so much talent out there. So we've had so many incredible CVs in. So actually, I think, again, for a new agency, it's a great time because there are so many people out there to look at and to potentially choose from when you're looking to build a team. I think Cam made a really interesting point as well, which is in terms of relationships with clients. So we have only met one of our clients in the flesh. Everything else has been done over Zoom, and everything from 10 hours worth of workshops with people in 10 different locations and 8 different time zones. And I think if you said that to anybody in normal life, they'd think, oh my God, that sounds awful. But actually, as Cam said, I think it's been a very bonding experience. And from my point of view, I think, again, for a new agency, brands have been much more brave. They've been quicker to make decisions. They, as Mike said, they're looking for agile agencies. So actually, I think all of those things have been real benefits for us.
It's a really good point, isn't it? I mean, I guess, you know, for all of you are in the situation where, as in terms of your own new ventures, you won't be experiencing it pre-coronavirus, pre-lockdown. So, I mean, to what extent do you think the culture that you're developing now in the early stages during this crisis will continue and sort of almost become a defining feature of the business in the future? I mean, do you think this, I guess, the sort of lack of office space and virtual pitching and client meetings and so on are obvious ones, but, you know, to what extent, I suppose, do you think your agency might be defined by the way you're working now, perhaps?
I'm happy to talk a little bit to that. And definitely in terms of people, and just from having lots of conversations with potential people to join the team, almost the remote working has been a more of a rule and less of an exception, which is absolutely fine. But I think people being much more upfront about how they want to work from the outset, and not just because they've got children or other responsibilities outside of work, has definitely been kind of a real shift, but one that definitely I'm much more responsive to anyway, because I have a son. But yeah, I think it's just really understanding what the team want and how they want to work, and making sure that, you know, there is still that opportunity to collaborate and come together, but that you're offering an opportunity that really fits with how they want to live and work from now on. And I mean, I've even heard just others have said, you know, I'm more likely to stay or buy a house outside of London now. There's there's less of a need to be closer and be, you know, 20 minutes or half an hour from work, for example. So I think definitely that's going to influence how we move forward and how we work differently in the industry.
Interesting. Do you interested to know actually if any of you have a physical office? I mean, clearly whether you're there or not is at the moment is a different question. But did any of you sort of sign a lease before the lockdown happened or anything like that?
We did actually. We signed a lease at the very end of March, knowing that lockdown was coming, but managed to get a sensational rent reduction and you know, a deal that lets us put it back every month until we deem it right to go back. So we've actually decided to go back from the 1st of August with all the you know, the protections in place and everything. Because, you know, we always did want an office. I mean, I think the way of working that's come out of the pandemic to some agencies for whom this environment is totally alien was something we were going to do anyway. Now, that's to say that we always wanted an office, and we do think that that coming together is important, but the flexibility around it and being entirely overt about that has always been something that we think is just the right way to do it. So I actually suspect that a lot of agencies might be talking the game about this being the new way of working, but as soon as they possibly can, they'll get back to the normal way of having people in the office as much as possible. But we'll see if that comes true.
It felt like actually last week was the week where a lot of people started to go back to the office. It was all over, certainly my social feeds. We do have an office. We plan to go back to the office later in the year. I think one of the things for me that is really important in all of this, not just for new agencies, but more widely, is there's been a lot of talk about all the great things that have happened. So people being able to bring more of themselves to work, people making quicker decisions, people being able to work more flexibly. I think if either the industry or individual agencies want those things to continue, they won't continue unless you design for them to continue. So the minute that you start to see people around you going back to the office or perhaps not working as flexibly, everyone will feel that they have to follow suit. So I think it needs to be a really conscious decision about what's right for your agency and also what's right for your clients, because at the end of the day, we are, you know, we're in service to our clients. But I think there's the opportunity to take a breath and think about actually how an agency wants their future to be, whether they're a new agency or a very old agency, because otherwise it will lose all the positives that have come out of this.
It's a good question. Are there any other sorts of positive ways of working or approaches, perhaps around client relations, that you think may be embedded in the business long term?
I think for us, we We will definitely have a hybrid structure, I think, moving forward between, you know, the flexibility that is afforded to you by working from home. Or people talk a lot about working from home, but just working remotely, full stop, you know, to give you that flexibility to kind of work from anywhere. But then, allied to the fact, you know, we do have an office, we know that, you know, some of our more junior members of staff don't have home offices or studies or, you know, the kind of facilities that maybe some of us more middle-aged, members of the team have. So, you know, they might well want to be in the office, and it might, you know, be a more conducive environment for them to work. So, I think we'll always have baked into our, business the flexibility. And I think, you know, the tools that we use, whether it's CRM or whether it's communications tools like Guild or, Propel or Dropbox or, you know, Zoom like everyone else, gives us a platform to always be working and collaborating with one another and reporting back to our clients, but in a really, really flexible fashion.
Yeah, we joke, Zoma and I, that we're like Ant and Dec because we've sat next to each other in a certain order for pretty much the last 15 years. So we've had to find a new way of working without being sat next to each other. But actually, it's been brilliant, and we wouldn't have found it were it not for this lockdown. So we just sit on Zoom all day, even if we're not working together, so that we can have that chat that you don't have in the office. And we found a way of, you know, working to work on the wall when we're not in the same place. So I agree with you. I think it will need to be a hybrid, and it's taking the positives of both and finding a way that works for everyone. And it's not going to be the same for every single person.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Gemma. Also, because I think with one of our clients, we actually go in once or twice a week. So it's kind of matching what you do to how clients want to work with you too. And actually, because there's not that many people in the office, it gives you that space, but also the ability to collaborate and get some decisions made even more quickly. So I completely agree that there's a piece around people and team, but also just more broadly how clients want to work with you.
Interesting. Another question I'd like to ask. I mean, clearly we've written about quite a few new agency openings recently, and the four of you have been among those, but there have also been others. I mean, why do you think there has been a flurry of new openings during the crisis? I mean, do you think it's coincidence or there are other reasons at play? I mean, I'm tempted to say, obviously, some people are being made redundant, sadly, and so on. That's going to encourage some people to go out on their own through necessity. I don't think that's the case from what you've been saying in your situations, because you've been planning this pre-lockdown by quite a long time. But do you have any thoughts about why there does seem to be more, there do seem to be more openings at the moment?
I think, you know, to answer your question, I think there's two answers. There's the truth, and then there's the post-rationalization. So the truth is, you know,
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mortgages to pay. I'm a risk-averse middle-aged man. I probably would have thought twice about leaving a safe and well-paid job at a great agency to go and start a new business in the teeth of the worst recession in living memory. But I think the post-rationalization is that recessions are actually a great time to launch a business. Yes, you know, new business might be slightly harder to find, and you've got to scrap harder to win it.
But you're starting from a zero base. You're unencumbered by any legacy technology or people or processes which may exist in more established businesses. We had the flexibility to be able to change our strap line and aspects of our value proposition between the time we started working on it and the time we launched. We were able to develop and launch a new and innovative service like our digital PR audit in the space of a weekend. We can move quickly to capitalize on where we see there's opportunity. And also, you know, being really honest with you, it's the law of small numbers. So I can tell you we've grown 600% in the last 6 weeks, and that sounds impressive. But from having gone from one to six clients would be a rounding error in a business like Edelman. So, you know, we've got a long way to go yet.
I would just add to that. I think, you know, as we said earlier, all of our agencies have been planned long before coronavirus was even a thing. So I do think it's partly coincidence at the moment. Although, as you've said, unfortunately, clearly some people will be forced into that as necessity. But I do think this is only a good thing. I think this startup culture within the industry and challenging the way things are done can only be a good thing. But ultimately, I think that the trend has to be that we all see opportunities in an industry that's fundamentally not working as well as it should do for a lot of clients and doesn't fit for a lot of clients. And I think that is probably the coincidence that brings us all together, although future agency openings may be more related to the circumstance of the crisis.
I'm going to move on and talk a bit. It'd be good to focus on clients, really. I mean, do you believe this crisis will redefine the client-agency relationships, and in what way? And obviously, you are going to be starting from a clean slate, so maybe you may be ahead of the game when it comes to these things. And also, do you believe it could change the agency business model, aside from the obvious things like remote working and how agencies operate?
Yeah, I can speak to that if you like. I think, you know, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. And, you know, I think if agencies don't use this as an opportunity to really reassess their businesses and their business models, then they're wasting the opportunity. My criticism of most of the agencies that have started in the last 5 to 10 years is they haven't really taken the opportunity of the technology that exists now or the wider business context to rethink what they do or how they do it. You know, there are exceptions like PR Network and Don't Cry Wolf, but most of the new agencies that have started out still basically get a group of young people in a shared office space in central London and then sell their time to companies for a markup. We've taken the opportunity to rethink every aspect of the agency model. So whether that's using CRM and analytics for everything we do, whether that's getting rid of timesheets because they are quite literally a waste of time, whether that's, you know, really focusing on delivering best-in-class measurement and transparency to our clients, or indeed, as we've touched on, where we're located, so where and how we work and how labour is divided between in-house and external resources to enable us to scale more quickly to respond to demand or changing circumstances. And ultimately, you know, I think all of that has a benefit for the clients, and we will only win, you know, if our clients really fully see the benefit of that. And that's why we're going to continue to invest in our people and value professional development and promote that to our clients and potential talent acquisitions as well, because we want Hard Numbers to be a champion of continuous professional development. And you'll hear a lot more about that hopefully from us in the not too distant future, because we think that is going to massively differentiate us from other agencies out there.
Thanks, Darrell. Anyone else got thoughts on this, on you know, particularly client agency relationships and structure of your businesses?
Oh no, I was just going to add that I think what's interesting, just even with us all talking here, is that we're all offering kind of more blended offers, because we kind of understand that it never has been, I guess, PR in isolation, and, you know, or just media relations. And I think the more sort of clients that we speak to, and the more, you know, specifically senior clients, they're looking for something different, and comms can play more of a role than just, you know, getting specific numbers to the piece of coverage, which the industry, I think, has talked about for a really long time, but hasn't necessarily innovated or moved on as much as we could have, like has been said, from a kind of technological point of view, but also just in the way that we work and the way we service clients. So I think definitely, a bit to your point earlier around what might we see differently, I think it is the agility that you have with a smaller agency to offer a more kind of bespoke service to clients who not quite sure exactly what part of the marketing mix they're looking for, but know that they want one kind of it to come from one voice that can really support them on whatever journey they're on. And that's definitely what we've found as we've been talking to kind of prospective clients and clients at Colder.
Yeah, I think agility is a really important point, because we were saying earlier, imagine if you're sitting there and you normally do John Lewis's Christmas ad, right? Or you make ads for a supermarket. You're having to think now about what that Christmas ad is. Who knows what Christmas looks like this year? Who knows if we're all back together? Who knows if we're on stronger lockdown? Who knows if we're allowed, you know, five other people? It's a really, really tricky situation to be in if you're in an industry where you've got very, very long lead times and very, very expensive production. So I think there's a big opportunity there for any agencies that can be agile, small and larger agile agencies, in order to help clients navigate this landscape. You know, you might have shot an ad yesterday that didn't have people in face masks in a shop, and lo and behold, we now are going to have to wear face masks in shops. So it's a very changing landscape, and I think we see the opportunity for us as helping brands and businesses navigate that changing landscape for the benefit of both people and their profits. So for example, there could be positive behaviors that people have adopted during lockdown, like hands-on hobbies, that your brand is really well placed to help them continue. Because as we were talking about before, just because we've really enjoyed doing certain positive things in lockdown doesn't mean we'll carry on. And actually there's lots of opportunity there for brands, whether it is hobbies or scratch cooking or helping people continue this family bond that actually apparently people have felt despite having to homeschool. You know, there are lots of opportunities there to adapt to changing consumer behavior or behavior that they want to keep.
It's an interesting point. I suppose the sort of the consumer behavior elements and the lack of certainty about, you know, what the world's going to look like, you know, frankly days from now, let alone weeks or months, is got to be a real consideration. Does anyone else have any views on this point? I suppose it comes down to, as someone mentioned earlier on, sort of the need to be agile and flexible. And perhaps, is there a sense that the old agency model wasn't really fit for purpose on this point?
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that. I mean, I think this is not a problem of the crisis. This is a problem that's been around for years. And I've just felt it slightly more acutely, I think, of late, especially working with, you know, hungrier, high growth businesses that are really exciting in terms of what they do and the markets they're trying to disrupt, who don't have the budgets necessarily to spend on six different agencies for six different channels, but they need that flexibility, and they need you to be able to change from what one month might be focused on media relations to the next month might be focused on entirely acquisition and a paid campaign. And I just don't think that large agencies can change quick enough. And that's for lots of reasons, from everything from structure and culture to systems and technology, or the lack of it in many cases. And I think everything we've discussed today and the other everyone else has talked about, that's a massive opportunity for new businesses starting from the beginning and able to do that all the best possible way we can from the ground up. And I do think that's a huge advantage over the incumbent agencies.
Yeah, we say that we want to give the right answer to the right problem, because if you go to a certain type of agency, you're only going to get a certain type of answer to your question, because that's what they sell. And actually what we want to look at is, what is the behavior that clients want to design for, and what's the core problem holding that behavior back from happening, and design for that and give the right answer for that, rather than just the answer that we sell off the shelf.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Gemma. Yeah, and I think Cam and Gemma and Mike have all touched on it in one way or another, right? If all you've got is a hammer, everything else looks remarkably like a nail. You know, and I think all of us have talked about having a flexibility to our approaches and a service portfolio and range that may be broader than you might get from other agencies. I think the flip of that, though, means that the focus in the business has got to be elsewhere. So, you know, for us, we're only focused on very specific clients in very specific verticals, because you definitely don't want to be in a position where you're all things to all people. But I think that flexibility of service and the ability to kind of go where the client need is, it's definitely been something that's really important to Hard Numbers, and it sounds like it's been really important to the other agencies too.
Out of interest, do any of you describe your agency sort of first off as a PR agency? I'm always fascinated by this question of what people call themselves these days when they open an agency in this world. How do you describe yourselves?
Well, we have controversially gone for creative agency, I think as perhaps a kickback as the use of the word creative agency, suggesting that no other types of agency could be creative. Because when we discussed what our proposition was going to be, clearly creativity, given the agencies that we've come from, was always going to be a really central part of it. But for us, it was about using creativity to put a dent in the universe. So how do you combine creativity with an understanding of behavior to make that happen? So, I mean, if nothing else, if you're asking me about my Google AdWords, there's PR in there, there's communications in there. The way that we describe it is we do creative communications and campaigning. And for us, that reflects the beauty of everything that we can bring from a PR point of view, but also the ability to provide creative thinking embedded in behavior that can work across multiple channels. So for one of the clients that we're working on, we've looked at their comm strategy, so their messaging, and how that should be communicated over time in order to achieve their goals. But we've also looked at creative that will happen at a big high profile sporting event that they're doing. So what might the branding be around the edge of the stadium? So for us, it was important to reflect both where our heart is, but also where we believe our thinking can stretch.
I think to give you a really honest answer to your question, John, it doesn't really matter to our clients. I think for the majority of the clients that we work with, they don't think of us as a PR agency or a marketing agency or a communications consultancy or anything else. They come to us with problems and we help them find solutions. So that could be we put on at the moment virtual events for clients, or we are running email marketing campaigns for some clients, or we are we've got one client where we're rewriting their investor deck. You know, there's a whole panoply of different challenges that we're helping clients with. You know, and for us, we don't really people don't come to us, or you know, their first question isn't you know, is we need, or their challenge isn't we need PR. The companies that we work with and that we love working with are companies that come to us and say, we need to grow, we need more clients, we need to open up in a new market, we've got a new service or product that we need to launch. We, you know, it's those things. And then we work back from that to say, okay, well, here's the series of things that we put in place to help you achieve that end goal, and here's how we'll manage your progress against it.
I completely agree with that, Daryl. So we're similar in that I think if we're pushed, we say marketing communications, but actually our offer is very different to different people. So for example, we're working with some clients exclusively on our kind of inclusively diverse offer, which is very much about building that cultural understanding within the workplace. So starting from an internal place, but then very much building to what does that look like in terms of inclusive business. They're very much more along the kind of ESG lines. And then with others, it's purely about kind of creative campaigns as they're on their journey to purpose-led growth. So it's very, very different to different people, but also it is very much about the problem that presents and what's the best way. And actually, I just had a call just before this where a client was saying, you know, is it internal, is it external? And they don't know, because actually it's just not the way they're looking at it. They just know they want to do something differently, and they need a partner to help them navigate what that looks like, whether they're talking to their employees or they're talking to their customer. And I think that is another kind of shift that I've definitely been seeing in terms of how potential clients have been sort of wanting to have the conversation about how Colder can support them.
Great, thank you. I want to move on now to the future. It'll be really interesting to hear from you all where you sort of see the business in, let's say, for argument's sake, 3 years. And I know sort of... in a sense, it's a fool's game to guess what the world's going to be like 3 years from now, but what the hell. Does anyone have any sort of anything like a clear idea of their sort of plan for where the business might be 3 years from now in terms of the types of clients, the type of work, maybe the size of the operation that they would like to share?
I'll happily go if no one else will.
You know, we have a pretty clear plan of where we want the business to be in 3 years' time, and we've got a two year business plan that we that's our base case that we basically benchmark our performance against on a monthly basis. But I'll be really honest with you, John. We have written now three versions of that business plan. We wrote a version of that business plan in around February time of this year, and it was quite a punchy, some decent growth and, you know, all the rest of it. Then we wrote a version of that business plan in mid-March, which basically assumed we wouldn't win a single client for 6 months. And then we wrote a version of the business plan around about, you know, the start of June, which, we're now actually outperforming all three of them, and we're tremendously fortunate to be in that position. But I feel like we've got a proposition which is machine tooled for the times that we live in. You know, every line item in every marketing budget is now discretionary, and every single penny has got to be justified. And when you walk into a C-suite of a company, they're not going to be impressed with your storytelling ability. They're going to be impressed with the numbers and the performance that you're able to deliver them. So I think that's the thing that we're gonna focus on for the foreseeable, and we're going to keep a really tight rein on costs and really focus on growing the top line, and very much hope that, you know, we'll be around in a year or two's time for you to do a follow-up podcast on this, John, and we'll see where we've got to.
Anyways, Gemma, would you like to give an idea of where you see your business 3 years hence?
A similar story. It's about growth. Obviously, by that point, we would like to be very much breaking into that top 150 table. I think for us, it will always, though, be growth, not at the expense of the work. So the creative caliber of the work, but also the effectiveness of the work. So very much what Daryl has talked about. You know, for us, there's no point making something if it's not shaking something, is what we say as Shook. So we want to be making work for clients that works for their business and for their brands, so that we have long-term relationships with those clients.
Sounds good. Cam, would you like to
Yeah, sure. I agree with what Gemma and Daryl have said also, is in that for us, it's very much about those longer term relationships. We have, I think, in terms of the initial business plan, we have rewritten it again, just because I think actually the inclusivity and diversity piece has been, we thought it would be of interest, and we'd get a lot of interest in it, but it's been even bigger than we thought it would be in terms of companies really wanting that support. And I'd imagine, depends if everybody is walking their talking, those sorts of areas, that piece might change quite or be quite different in a year or 2 years' time, which would actually be a good thing. I think from a kind of the overall kind of purpose offer and working with brands to help them really walk their talk, whether that's climate or societal change, again, growth is the name of the game, but it is very much also about working with the clients that have that commitment. And we were quite clear that you've got to be at a place where you want to do something a bit differently first, so that's really important in terms of those partnerships and the clients that we work with.
Great. And Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think for us, number one, it's the work and looking for the right kind of client that fits our agency. And then ultimately redefining our clients and you know, ultimately defining markets. You know, that's what we're looking for, certainly over the first year or two, and also looking to do work in all verticals and all channels and really, you know, following through on what we want to do and our proposition. And secondly, I'd say technology. So, you know, as I said earlier, we're investing in our own technology that lets clients monitor, track, predict and react, which I think is now just absolutely vital. So I'd like to see that well established within 3 years. And then also we're going to look to get out of the UK as quickly as we can. Not entirely, we will still be here, but I think the one word we haven't used so far is Brexit and what happens irrespective of COVID. I think, a business that's looking beyond the UK to do work beyond the UK, and actually two of our clients so far, one has been in Sweden and one was in the Middle East. I think that is a very sensible plan for any agency that is looking at the slightly longer term picture.
I think...
Can I ask a question?
I was just going to say, I think or hope that that will be easier for all of us because of what's happened during lockdown, working remotely with clients, working with technology. I think we all have the opportunity to be much more borderless in terms of the clients that we work with, particularly because I don't think what any of us is sort of solely offering is that media relations. So actually that more kind of strategic and creative thinking from our point of view, but the opportunity to do that elsewhere other than the UK, I hope will be great for all of us.
I agree.
Great. Well, really good stuff. I'm afraid that's all we got time for. It went very quickly, but I would like to thank you all, Gemma, Daryl, Cam and Mike, for joining us and for our production partners, Marketeers. If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit the PR Week website and support our journalism. On behalf of the PR Week team, until next time, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the PR Show podcast with John Harrington. Brought to you by PR Week. If you've liked what you've heard, please leave us a nice review.